On this week's 51%, we hear from an author on unruly women.
A lot of people think celebrity is dumb and stupid and vapid, and anyone who's interested in it are all of those things as well. And I think celebrity is one of the best ways to understand our culture at a given moment.
We check in with blues singer Lila Ammons and share a personal essay. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. Discuss the latest escapades of the likes of Kim Kardashian, Lena Dunham, and Caitlyn Jenner, you're likely plugged into the world of celebrity gossip. And even if you're not, the abundance of salacious headlines involving the behavior of female celebrities makes them hard to avoid. Author and BuzzFeed columnist Anne Helen Peterson posits that this lens of unruliness is responsible for the ascension of these pop culture powerhouses. In her new book, Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman, she discusses what she sees as a phenomenon. She spoke with 51%'s Jessica Blaustein Marshall about how public criticism makes and breaks the celebrity women of today. And she starts by talking about her book.
Yeah, so this book, I was kind of, 2 years ago, I was trying to think of, all the celebrities who were really interesting to me in that moment. And I made a list and I thought, okay, how can I connect all of these women in some way? And the way that they connected was through this lens of unruliness. So thinking about what are the ways that maybe someone like Melissa McCarthy, what does she have in common with Kim Kardashian? And the idea of Kim Kardashian's unruly pregnancy, which she was really ridiculed for this first pregnancy and the way that she appeared in public while pregnant, connects to a lot of the unruly performances of body that you see with Melissa McCarthy.
Interesting. Now, what makes an acceptable woman versus an unruly woman? What's sort of the definition of those two terms?
It's a hard thing to, precisely define because it changes historically, it changes in a particular moment, it changes where you are in the country. I always think of it as someone who, if you're around that person, maybe you come away from that experience and you say to the person in the car with you, you're like, oh, that lady was too much. And to me, what that really means is her clothes were too much, her earrings were too much, her hair was too much, but she might have also talked too much. Her body might have been too much. There's all these different ways. And what it really means is that person is not accepting our understandings of what proper femininity should be. They're trespassing those boundaries.
Now, tell me about some of the folks that you talk about in the book.
Yeah, so each chapter has a subtitle that refers to their overarching unruly qualities. So each of these women is unruly in many overlapping and compounding ways. But I chose a single way to kind of dive into their celebrity image. So Serena Williams is too strong. Melissa McCarthy is too fat. The women who are the stars of the show Broad City are too gross. Madonna is too old. Lena Dunham is too naked, that sort of thing.
Too naked. When you're talking about all of these women and in the context of all of these women's sort of profiles, celebrity profiles, what can, the average woman take away from this?
I really made that part of my book in a way that I hadn't expected. I think that other unruly women can either, obviously embrace their own unruliness and not feel shamed about it, but also be very conscious of the way that we police women who act in ways that might seem unruly. So what I ask in the book is, it's so easy to go after these women. It's so easy to judge them. It's so easy to do it without even knowing that you're doing it. And some of it's done by men, but a whole lot of it is done by women. And so taking that second to think and be like, why am I reacting the way that I am to this female celebrity who's doing something in public? Or, a non-celebrity who's doing something in public. And that sort of mindfulness is really at the heart of what I'm hoping for.
Where do you see the concept of the unruly woman going?
I think that unruliness never goes away. It takes different forms. It's pushed into obscurity at various moments. Or, the real example is a lot of women in Hollywood and out of Hollywood are actually too unruly to even be employable. So I chose women who were unruly enough to be popular, but not so unruly that they're actually on the fringes of mainstream society. Thinking through where those women, because they don't go away, you know, every year, every decade has those women, but are they so pushed to the side or are they embraced?
Do you think a little unruliness is good for everyone?
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. You know, like I signed my book, Stay Unruly. And what I mean by that is, like, look for those moments in yourself where your impulse is to be like, oh, I shouldn't do that, or I shouldn't have done that. But that still, you know, I'm not saying don't do things that make you feel uncomfortable, but if it feels right to you, then don't let other people or internalized shame make you feel bad about, you know, anything from raising your hand in class to going on the street to protest to letting your body be the way that feels healthy and good to you.
You have a really interesting degree, so I wonder if you could talk about that.
Yeah, I have a PhD. I say I have a PhD in celebrity gossip, but really it's a PhD in media studies. And I studied the history of celebrity fan magazines and celebrity gossip in terms of how has information and gossip about celebrities been generated, sold, and consumed over the last century. So a lot of people think celebrity is dumb and stupid and vapid, and anyone who's interested in it are all of those things as well. And I think celebrity is one of the best ways to understand our culture at a given moment.
Were the unruly women of yesterday much different from the unruly women of today?
You know, it's fascinating. I think the things that made historical unruly women compelling, and then also the sort of woman that had to be censored, they're very similar. So, like, Mae West is one of my favorite examples. She had an unruly body that was so popular and so magnetic that, like, she inspired what was then called a trend against reducing. So reducing was the word for dieting. And really, you know, she was like a size 8 or a 10. And she also wrote all of her own stuff. She was very witty and sexual. Like, she had these sexual innuendos. She's a brilliant writer. And people loved it. And then they were like, oh, God, no, maybe we need to push this away. And she became kind of pushed out of Hollywood, but then had this brilliant second career as kind of like a Broadway, a person about town in New York. And other women have been marked as unruly for things like, you know, being the star of their own show and also doing things like singing the national anthem off key and then grabbing their crotch, which is what Roseanne did in the mid-90s. And she's kind of the unruly woman par excellence. And, you know, Hillary Clinton, early Hillary Clinton was an unruly woman. Like, early Jane Fonda was unruly. There's so many examples.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. Is there a parallel among men, among celebrity men? Is there any sort of parallel where we regard them as, you know, unruly?
You know, I don't think it's a parallel. And what's interesting is I think more there's ways of being masculine in public that are just completely unaccepted in mainstream Hollywood. But I do think that when men do the things that get women in trouble, they are just marked as like a bad boy. So like Shia LaBeouf is so unruly and he just gets to apologize over and over again, you know? Like, it doesn't actually change their bankability in a substantial way. Sean Penn has been, like, unruly all of his career. Johnny Depp, same thing.
Doesn't seem fair, huh? Well, thank you so much for talking to me today. Is there anything else that you want to throw in about your book or about any of the research or work that you've done on this topic?
It looks like it's a book for women. You know, it's pink, and I'm talking about women. But I think the men who I know in my life who have read it and told me about it, and men who I don't know who have told me about it, have found it so fascinating and edifying. And, you know, you can take off the pink dust jacket if you're not comfortable with that. But I think it'll open a lot of eyes about the ways that women feel constrained in the world around them.
That was Anne Helen Peterson, author and BuzzFeed columnist, speaking to 51%'s Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Peterson's new book is Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman. Girl Scouts, from Tiny Daisies to Teen Ambassadors, may earn 23 new badges focused on science, technology, engineering, and math. It's the largest edition of new badges in a decade for Girl Scouts of the USA. The effort takes a progressive approach to STEM and also nudges girls to become citizen scientists using the great outdoors as their laboratory. Among the new badges are those that introduce kindergartners and first graders to the world of robots and engineering. Scouts can learn basic programming and build prototypes to solve everyday problems. Older scouts will have the chance to enhance those skills, learning more about artificial intelligence, algorithms, and how to formally present their work. Other new badges focus on race car and aviation design using kits from Goldieblocks, a girl-focused toy company. The Leave No Trace approach to interacting with the environment and the study of meteorology by learning to predict weather patterns and potential hazards are among activities geared to new outdoors badges. Lila Ammons has sung at a lot of great places, big and small, in both the U.S. and Europe. You might say it comes naturally to her. Ammons is part of an accomplished jazz family that includes pianist Albert Ammons, who was her grandfather, and sax player Gene Ammons, who was her uncle. Maybe that's why she sees jazz as a process and why she both documents the work of her musical forebears in her shows and sings so many styles. And she speaks about the importance of female blues singers in the promotion of the genre. She spoke with KBEM's Phil Nussbaum about her work.
You played on my piano and now you wanna beat my drum. You played on my piano and now you wanna beat my drum. You think I'm gonna let you, but baby, I ain't so dumb.
We're speaking with jazz singer Lila Ammons. Lila, that was just a taste of You Played on My Piano, one of your classic blues that you do in a show called Voices of Influence, where you trace the influence of great female jazz singers on each other, like Ma Rainey, Bessie Smith, Billie Holiday, Dinah Washington, and others. What causes you to take this approach?
I love the music that they sing. Some of which I've been singing in my classic blues concerts over the years in Europe. And so for me, it's just a lot of fun because I love the repertoire, number one, and I wanted to share the fun, not only the history, but the fun of the music and the different styles of the music, different grooves, different takes, different feelings. And I just thought it would be kind of interesting to learn a little bit about the roots of the blues music through these ladies and how that blues carried through into the development of jazz.
The song You Played on My Piano, it's underneath us still right now. How does that fit in with your show?
This actually coinciding with Bessie Smith and On Up. This is kind of classic blues music. And this particular version that I do of You Played on My Piano was sung by Helen Humes, who was a wonderful blues shouter. I do Helen Humes because she bridges that gap. She had about a 50-year career, and even sang with Count Basie, replacing Billie Holiday, as a matter of fact. And Count Basie fired Billie Holiday because he didn't like the way she phrased. All of these things tie together to me and just are so fascinating.
Why you like to make some music, that's what you're dreaming of. Hope you're better at making music than you are at making love. You played on my piano, now you wanna beat my drum. You think I'm gonna let you, but baby, I ain't so dumb.
Lila, over the years, you've developed a show called Women in Blues, and it covers a very interesting period in the history of American pop, blues, jazz, where the blues came out of the field and onto the concert stage.
Yes, this was really a fascinating time for a lot of reasons. One, because blues was now becoming, through these female singers, very popular through because they were traveling now and they were singing in theaters. But then when they started to record in 1920, it really jumped and became very popular, and all the record companies began recording blues singers just by the dozens and dozens. There are hundreds of wonderful singers from that period. So they actually were very instrumental in the beginning of the recording industry, these blues singers. So I really feel it's important for people to know not only about the roots of this music, but how important these women singers were and instrumental they were in promoting blues as an art form. Audiences of all types began to really love and appreciate blues through these female singers.
Tell us something about Trouble Everywhere I Roam.
Well, that is one of my favorite songs to sing. That was recorded by Sippy Wallace, who came out of Texas. She had two brothers, and her two brothers and herself wrote a lot of blues songs. They moved to New Orleans. From New Orleans, they went to Chicago, and actually, Sippy Wallace recorded with my grandfather. Now, she didn't record that song with him, but she did record some songs with my grandfather. Buzz Me was one of them. And but I like this song because it's kind of a barrel house, kind of has a little bit of a barrel house beat to it, and you can really put yourself into it. I really can sing with a little growl when I do this song. There's trouble here, trouble is everywhere. So I just really like the rhythm of this song and the feeling of this song. You can really get down deep into this song, yeah.
Lord, everywhere I go, trouble is everywhere. I was born in Louisiana, traveled Savannah, stopped in Havana, drove through Texarkana, but hey.
Lila, you've always been known as a jazz singer, but then there's the classic blues you've been doing, and now you're a featured vocalist with the blues band Paul Berry and the Ace Tones. How does doing all these types of music affected you?
I think if I hadn't done the classic blues first, I would not be singing the music with Paul. And also, in doing the classic blues, it really has given my jazz singing a deeper dimension, because it all stems from, like you said, starts from the field and it builds. And I think that knowing more about where it comes from, having that root and that sense of origin, has really given me something to hold on to with the jazz. And almost everything I do now kind of comes from somewhere very deep. And now I can relate to the lyrics a lot more. The feeling, it's a lot more comes from me and not just a lot of pretty notes and just kind of singing. It's really more about what I'm trying to communicate. I think Paul recognized when I met him, through my doing this classic blues, that I maybe had a sense, kind of a good rhythmic sense.
Which song would you like to hear with you singing in front of Paul Berry and the Ace Tones?
Paul wrote a really great tune called Talk is Cheap and has a lot of attitude. And that, to me, exemplifies the classic blues, where the ladies were singing in the classic blues with the double entendre. And they also were very liberated, and they really spoke their mind. And I like that, and that brings that out in this song, Talk is Cheap. They don't talk crap to me, they just kind of put it out there. So I would say Talk is Cheap is probably a really good one.
It's all over town, you're saying this or that. Now, baby, I don't go for that. Talk is cheap. Yeah, talk is cheap. Haven't you heard? Actions speak louder than words.
Lila Ammons explores the histories of jazz and blues. It's all part of Lila's family background and expanding musical universe. Information at lilaammonsmusic.com. This program is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Phil Nussbaum speaking.
Hong Kong's government recently said there are no plans to remove a pair of statues depicting World War II Japanese Army sex slaves known as comfort women that were erected in front of Japan's consulate in the Chinese territory. Activist Sang Kin-shing said the bronze statues were a reminder to Japan of its culpability in forcing women recruited or captured from Japan, the Korean Peninsula, and elsewhere to serve in frontline brothels. A government spokesman said Hong Kong's police have said the statues would not be removed. Tsang, a former member of Hong Kong's Legislative Assembly, said he wants them to remain in place for the rest of the year. He said he understood the Japanese consulate had asked the Chinese territory's government to have the statues removed. He said he'll continue to press Japan for apologies and compensation. Many Chinese nationalists say Japan has never fully repented for its brutal invasion of China and accompanying atrocities, including forcing women into sexual slavery. The Japanese consulate did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Japan issued an apology in 1993 over the issue, and a government investigation concluded many women were taken against their will and lived in misery under a coercive atmosphere. We now bring you Dr. Sharon Ufberg with her 51% segment, Force of Nature. This time, she shares a personal essay.
Recently, I lost someone very important to me. Rita was a second mother to me as far back as I can remember in my childhood. She was the mother that cracked jokes and showed me it was perfectly fine to dance while cooking or to recount a story just for a laugh. Having lost my own mother as I approached adulthood, Rita became the only mother I knew as an adult woman. Her unconditional love and support will be sorely missed. The enormous grief I felt upon losing Rita came almost as a surprise to me. I had already experienced mourning the death of both my biological parents years ago, and recently dealt with the loss of a close friend unexpectedly. But something broke open in me with Rita's passing, and it left me stewing about many other insights that were becoming apparent to me as I aged. These thoughts seeped into my brain slowly, but have really stuck with me. So here they are. Number one, more experience and age opens the heart to greater joy and pain, not less. As a young adult, I felt the sting of sadness and loss, and the heart expanding of a new love for the men in my life, for my newborn children. But as I age, I feel even more deeply. I thought more grief would make me accustomed to sadness or loss, but it actually allowed me to feel loss more acutely. And the same for love. The more I love, the more deeply I feel it. With more experiences, both joy and loss become clearer and more profound, no matter how many times you succeed, fail, are delightfully surprised, or unexpectedly saddened in a lifetime. Number two. We are always evolving. While we may have a core personality, a fundamental disposition, or a strong set of habits, over time our desires, needs, and hopes and dreams change. What is gratifying or satisfying shifts as we wind through different phases of our lives. Number three, with wisdom comes great compassion. With education comes understanding. With community comes consolation. With age comes clarity, recognition, and empathy. Number four, no matter how far one travels, how many new places, people, or things you seek out, life will be the same for you unless the change happens from within. I have lived all over the world and created and recreated my life over and over again, but it's clear that wherever I go, I take myself with me. Number five, gratitude is a practice. It is not automatic, but can be strengthened like any muscle in your body. It is a sure way to stay connected to the present and the good in each day. Number six, it is uncanny how invincible and fragile one can be simultaneously. And number seven, everyone is responsible for creating their own life story. Creating this list helped me to grasp a sense of meaning and personal belief about the way life is, and it gave me solace. Perhaps these musings of mine will give you some comfort too. This is Dr. Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
Dr. Sharon Ufberg is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom in California. She writes for the Huffington Post and Thrive Global. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1463.